Ipse leads the way.
Ipse.
One system, personnel, and pay.
Ipse.
21st century.
Ipse.
Total force visibility.
Welcome to another episode of the Ipse podcast. I'm Colonel Greg Johnson, and as usual, we're going to talk about topics that impact the Ipse program, but also impact our Army. Today's episode is pretty interesting. We're going to talk about the Army organizational server and really force structure modernization in the Army. What does that mean? What is it? What's the impact to the Ipse program, but also what's the impact to units and organizations and even talent management? Today, we have a couple of members of the Ipse team that will really have a conversation with me about that Army org server and what it means. So I'd like to introduce, you know, Major Kyle Luema, who is really our lead for how Ipse will integrate the Army org server as we go forward. And then also Captain Dick Hawks, who's been tied to our release two fielding, but also overseeing how AOS interacts with Ipse in our release two with the National Guard. So why don't we start with you guys introducing yourselves a little bit, talking a little bit about your backgrounds and how you plug into this, and then we'll go from there. So Kyle, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. So as you said, I'm Major Kyle Luoma. I've been on the Ipse program for about 2 years now, working primarily assisting with the Release 3 design. And as you said, integrating the Army org server through the preliminary design to the critical design review, and now as we're in build and test. Before I joined the program, I was a force manager. I had just come from the Army Futures Command task force, where I helped them build out some of their TDA, their manning documents. Prior to my career as a force manager, I was an aviation officer. And I had the privilege of being able to fly Army aircraft for about 8 years. So that's about sums up my Army career. Oh, and by the way, since I got here to Ipse, I turned myself into an ORSA. So I really can't make up my mind as far as what I want to do. Originally, I come from California, born and raised. And so I like to think that a lot of what I do technically harkens back to growing up in and around the Silicon Valley and all the things that go on there.
I mean, that's pretty amazing, Kyle. I think you get some bonus points from being from the Bay Area in California. I mean, obviously, that's where I'm from. So pretty cool. And yeah, you even have more of a, you know, dynamic. I mean, you were an aviator, a Black Hawk pilot. You play like 10 instruments, and then you're really a coding, kind of guy too. So, I mean, you got a lot going on. Obviously we're pretty lucky to have you on the team to help us with these, you know, big problem sets. I came into the program in 2016, but I had never even thought about how Ipse or how HR systems consume Army structure data. It was, pretty far from my, thoughts. So you've certainly helped us think through this over the last couple of years. Hey, Dick, why don't you introduce yourself, and then we'll throw some questions on the table. We can have a conversation about.
Yes, sir. My name is Captain Richard Hawks. I was born on the West Coast, Oregon. It's the state with all the trees, and my Raider and Senior Raider, all in concurrence. West Coast is the best coast. I joined the Army. My entire family have enlisted experience. They wanted me to go to college. I got an undergrad in psychology, and I actually joined the Army as a Seaburn officer. So I quickly discovered an interest as a second lieutenant in AG work. I liked the connection, the direct connection with the commander. I liked how many people they got to interact with, and I liked the importance of HR in the military and how much of a difference it can make in mission success. It's one of those things. When you're doing well, it's quiet. When you're doing it wrong, it causes a lot of problems. After my deployment as a Seaburn officer, I put in a VTIP and I went AG. I eventually certain things happened. I wound up on the Ipse program. I have about a year here. I started off my time on the R2 project, and my job was to connect user stakeholders, developers, and other functionals on our program to get together and to get them to understand the difference in perspective when they're building something that has a very specific use, right? So I came on after we went live, and my job was to help shape sustainments. So I've completed that, and I've joined the R3 team, and I'm working with Major Loam on the Army Org server.
Dan, you did do a training with industry, stint over at Wells Fargo, one of the programs that we've created. But that's really where I met you, is when you were out there in Minneapolis, you know, really learning how to use PeopleSoft in a company as big as Wells Fargo. So you two have some pretty good experience coming into this job. You know, the two things that you two probably have in common, you know, for me working with you, is that you just have this analytic mind that can look at these data problems, or even, you know, larger structural Army problems, and then kind of come up with, you know, smaller, tasks to go at. You know, how do you integrate that with a program like IPSAE? You guys both have that skill set. You know, it's very, I think it's hard to quantify that in a personnel record. But, you know, that kind of skill set that you both have is, you know, almost at the very crux of, you know, where we're going with talent management. How do we figure that out? How do we understand that? How do we track it in our officers and NCOs? And then how do we create a demand signal from organizations through maybe our force structure? You know, I think that's how all this kind of comes together long term. But, you know, it's cool to have you guys on this team helping us through this. So, you know, Kyle, I'll probably pass it to you. You know, maybe you just talk, you know, the topic is the Army Org server. So maybe you just say what it is, and then we can kind of go from there.
Sure. I think that's a good place to start. So I'm sure many of our listeners aware of the IPSAE program have probably heard of it, at least in passing, but many probably have not yet. And so, as you said during the introduction, AOS is an acronym, and it stands for the Army Organization Server. As the name suggests, it's the place, the system that houses Army organization data. If you've been in the Army for more than a day, especially if you are like an HR person, 42 series, or a force manager, you're used to looking at the Army organization data inside of FMS Web. That's kind of the outward facing. If I want to look at an MTO or TDA, I'm going to go to FMS Web and take a look and see, you know, who am I authorized to, how many people am I required to have, and all that stuff. You know, anything you need to look at there. The AOS is kind of an extension of what you see in FMS Web. Both systems exist. FMS Web is not gone anywhere. It's still here. But AOS is there right next to it, gets data from FMS Web, and houses all that same organizational information. But it takes it another step further. It turns it from this really flat file, row and column kind of spreadsheet format that you see. It's called the web TADS, or the TADS format, to be technical. And it turns it into this linked dynamic hierarchical structure that includes all of the billets at the lowest level, if you think of like a tree, and then connects them up through the paragraphs and the other elements of organizations up to the organizations themselves. And then it connects all those organizations together into one giant hierarchy that represents the entire Army, all components, National Guard, active and reserve, in one tree. And you can see it all in one spot. It incorporates new data standards that are implemented by the DoD, called the Global Force Management Data Initiative. And there's rules around that we can get into. But essentially, it creates that hierarchy, and then it adds structure to it, temporary structure that you need for additional business processes we can get into. And what that ultimately becomes is the one source of force structure that IPSAE relies on to set the demand signal for all of the processes that we perform in IPSAE related to structure. And if you think about when you get put on assignment, you're put on assignment to a unit. When you get orders, you're on orders to a unit, you name it, anything you could think of. And that all comes from AOS. So IPSAE sees AOS as that authoritative source of Army and other service force structure that Army people could be assigned to.
I think this is uber important because we really have been pushed into a scenario where we need to bring data from the authoritative data sources. And you go back several years, most HR systems were creating their own structure inside those systems. So if you go to the National Guard when they were running SITPERS, 54 states and territories, they're running their own structure in that system. And that's not really connected to the authoritative Army structure systems. And so this move to utilizing and consuming data from the Army org server is really, moving towards that arena where we're going to take that authoritative data and then use it in our HR system of record, which becomes, IPSE for all three components later this year, so December of 21, as we get all three components in IPSE. That's part of the main thing. This is important, but maybe you can expand upon that just a bit.
Yeah, yes, sir. Thank you. Absolutely. As you said, we're moving away from an environment where there's lots of different databases out there connected to different systems that all have their different processes and input points that create different views of things. And force structure data was no exception to that. And so what's really important from that perspective from AOS is that it creates a single repository of that data that IPSE relies on to say, hey, this is the real truth of what the Army is made out of and what consists of Army structure. And it's the truth down to a very detailed level that we didn't have before. Whereas before, you kind of roll things up to maybe a paragraph and line number if at the lowest level, other units roll up to a UIC, if it's like a schoolhouse. Now with AOS, it's all the way down to the billet level, no matter where you are, very, very detailed. And in order for other systems to communicate with IPSE, and IPSE says, hey, I've got this person assigned to this organization, those other systems have to recognize the same source of truth being the Army org server. So say a system that did analytics for the Army, created dashboards that merged lots of things together. Well, they would get the personnel data from IPSE, and IPSE would say, hey, this person is assigned to this position. This is the data that describes both the person and the position. And then that other external system would have to recognize, okay, I recognize that data that came through IPSE from AOS, and I can link it back to the original source as well. And we can only do that by consolidating and making sure that the enterprise understands where that data is authoritative. And as you said, it's, for the GFMDI force structure, it's AOS. And as you can imagine, a pretty big technological change like this, of course, brings along with it changes to what people do, how they manage the data, and then the processes that they perform to ensure that they're doing the right thing with the right data.
So AOS is tied to IPSE in a release 2. And, Dick, I'm gonna come to you and ask you how that's kind of going. But the big leap from just seeing this kind of come to fruition as we went live in just a couple of years ago in Pennsylvania in early 2019 was that, hey, if you're a G1, G3 type person, you're now looking at structure in this AOS very actively as that data then came into IPSE. And, we're doing the assignments and slotting against those positions that feed over to IPSE, but you're doing the slotting and the assignments in IPSE. So there was this mirroring of the two, systems. But, part of this is also that, that whole GFMDI compliance thing, right? I mean, we were kind of driven by OSD to get to a more level of fidelity on some of our structured data, right, Kyle?
That's right, sir. Kind of goes back to, well, if we want to improve interoperability, we all have to play by the same rules. And one of those rules is absolutely defined, in DoD instructions that basically says one person must be in one position and one position can only have one person in it. And seems simple, but if you really start peeling it back, you realize very quickly how much different that is from what we're used to. And I think in R2, the National Guard realized that and had to work through a lot to get to where they are now.
Yeah, I mean, just on the face of it, most units, if you're in the active duty, most units usually have more than 100%, especially if you're in a brigade combat team or in a divisional type unit. There's that's in the way that had to be solved in that kind of guidance. But then, I think it's probably also important for the listeners. I mean, the IPSA program didn't come up with GFMDI standards or compliance, one face to one space. That's really coming from like OSD level, right?
Absolutely. Yes, sir.
So we're kind of just, reacting to policy changes in this regard, but then also adhering to where authoritative data is. Dick, maybe talk a little bit about where we're at in release two. We've been live for 2 years now. The entire Guard's in IPSA, and we've had a ton of lessons learned.
Yeah, absolutely, sir. So it's really important for people listening, Battalion S1s, to understand that you now have a new player in the realm, right? You not only do you have FMS Web that contains UIC, paragraph, and line number, and now you have AOS that is taking paragraph and line numbers where there are multiple authorizations and creating distinct positions with a value that is connected to that position. That is what's feeding IPSA, and that is a new way of thinking for Battalion S1s. So not only do you have your paragraph and line numbers being broken down into a more granular manner, but you have position management across time, which is something I never have had to deal with as a Battalion S1. So there are some lessons learned around this, around the introduction of AOS and how the Guard has had to shift itself and learn. And they kind of learned as they went, because there was nowhere else to look and take lessons learned and incorporate them, because this is an entirely new concept. So one of the first things that I would communicate, force management folks doing data entry into AOS have an immediate impact on Battalion S1s. So before, where if you messed up force structure, it would feed FMS Web and maybe it would get loaded in the email PO and you'd have some positions missing. Well, now the force management community through AOS, they're managing positions in time. So if a position gets deleted from across all time, that gets sent to IPSA. And what AOS is telling IPSA is, hey, I'm just kidding, this position never existed. Well, IPSA has people assigned to that position, and that position is associated with a UIC or department. And then when you're breaking that, you're creating data integrity issues in IPSA, and that challenges the Battalion S1, right? So there's going to be a shift as we go into R3, where the G1 and the G3 community on the active and reserve side, they're going to have to talk a lot more about problems that are happening in the G1 realm. There's going to be back and forth communication, and it's not just understanding who the player is. It's understanding how you talk to those people. How do you escalate problems that are tied to positions? And so that's one of the things Major Ngoma and I are going to tackle over time. How can we help that transition be a little more comfortable? A second topic, and this is going to upset people, there's no more multi-slotting. So as a Battalion S1, there are certain positions that are very political, that are very challenging to manage around. One of the most common ones, company commander. When you're dealing with multiple people back to back in a position, it can become a little tenuous. You have people trying to make KD requirements. And while it's not good practice, what sometimes happens is you have a little overlap. When you have an incoming and outgoing commander and they're ripping, sometimes that gap exists, and that's pretty normal to have some awkwardness when you're managing, a company command slate versus an HR system. But S1s and their commanders are going to have to work through that tension, because there's no more multi-slotting, and you only get a slot one person in time. And the final takeaway, S1s are really going to have to pay attention to changes in their authorizations, changes in force management data. So as I was talking, you know, AOS feeds information to us. They send us new data, a new position, whenever something about that position changes. So what S1s are going to find is that they're going to be doing reassignments, even sometimes into what is mostly looks like the same position. But something about that changed, and that produces a transaction for the HR professional. Those are some big takeaways. It's revolutionary, and I can't understate the biggest learning curve. It's position management across time. You're not just slotting people once with an order saying you're going to a position. Those positions exist in time in IPSA.
You know, I definitely wrote down positions over time, and it makes sense. Like, okay, so if something happens that deletes a position in AOS, right, there's some cascading effects. And then you have to really be attuned to how that's changing as that data comes over and then fills into you know, whatever your unit looks like in IPSA. I think some other complications with the guard was they changed duty statuses, you know, all the time from 32 to 10, title 32 to title 10. There are obviously some complications there and some learning things over time. But nevertheless, what you're saying is, hey, you got to kind of pay attention to what AOS means to IPSA. So, you know, Kyle, what are we doing then to prepare in release 3? I know there's some specified guidance to units, but like, what are we doing at the schoolhouse, like the AG schoolhouse, to get this kind of, you know, more in the spotlight?
Training and educating the force on AOS is absolutely one of my primary lines of effort here on the program. You know, of course, working with the Army G3 on occasion to deliver that message. With the Army schoolhouse in particular, we've had a long-standing relationship with them. You know, they're involved and they attend the trainings. They, you know, we, in fact, one of our best and brightest warrant officers, Chief Rimmer, he PCS'd from working with me on AOS. Now he's at the schoolhouse spearheading that integration as well.
And my favorite warrant of all time.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Great warrant officer. And, you know, today, actually, I got an email from the AGS. You know, we're coordinating another time to engage and talk to some of the OBC Bullock type classes going through about AOS. You know, they're going to give me about 10 minutes or so to talk. And that's, you know, just another of many touch points that I have with those guys to get that message out there. More formally, you know, they're working with me to sort of incorporate some of the products I use for my reoccurring training every week to sort of integrate that into their POI in the long term, so that as new soldiers and officers go through the schoolhouse, you know, they get some exposure to what AOS is and what it means to them as personnel managers using IPSA.
You're doing training for units in preparation for go live in release 3. What specifically are you doing there?
Yes, sir, of course. So, you know, really leveraging heavily the CVR, Microsoft Teams environment, to provide remote training. And so this started about a year ago. We were going to go out and do a mobile training team to the Army, to spread the word about AOS, start educating at the ASCC, ACOM, and DRU level. We put out a frago for it and everything. And of course, COVID hit. So that kind of forced us to this more of a remote posture. And so now, leveraging the tools that have been made available to us as a result of that, we're able to provide weekly training that focuses those command levels and below. You know, now we've got ACOM, division, corps level attendees, even sometimes brigade and battalion. You know, we don't restrict who can show up, so anyone interested can come. And we cover every topic that you can imagine when it comes to the tools available in AOS, the processes around management of things like temporary billets in AOS. And of course, a very important topic we cover quite consistently is, you know, how does what you do in AOS affect what you see and do in IPSA? And how does what you do in IPSA drive the processes back that you need to perform inside of AOS. And so we're connecting that FM and HR perspective together inside the training as well in many of our sessions.
So what's the feedback so far? I mean, I'll share what I've gotten feedback from folks, but Kyle, from your take, what's the feedback?
So when we go out and give training, the folks who ask us for it, the folks who attend, for the most part, it's been positive. And then, areas where they think, well, maybe we could expand more on this or that. And of course, we're able to take that feedback and incorporate into future events. But for the most part, it seems to be effective. That's personal feedback I've received. But also the other feedback I see is, as we're going through this process in preparation for going live called Faces to Spaces, where we're doing this data-driven approach to improving the data in AOS. Well, we rely on commands to do that work, and they can't do it if they're not trained. And so we've provided them training to it. And now we're seeing commands like TRADOC and ForceCom and USERPAC and CID command and US Army Europe, to name a few, getting into AOS and doing the job they're supposed to do and doing it successfully, to the point where they're getting to the end state already very early in terms of accomplishing the Faces to Spaces goals. And to me, that's another good indicator that what we're doing with our training is having an effect on the right people.
Yeah, maybe the year of 2021 is the year of positivity, positive vibes all around, Kyle.
I sure hope so, sir.
Totally. I think up front, though, like if you listen to Dick and how he explained, hey, here's several things that change, right? I think people's natural reaction is like, oh boy, here comes something else that we have to deal with. So I think there's some tentative, thoughts up front about, the incorporation of this with, the HR system. So I get that a lot. And I get, who's going to do the work? Is it a G3 or G1 function? I think it's solely, it's a mix of, for me, it's very clear. It's a mix of both G1 and G3 jobs to make sure this connection works well. And then when you see kind of where force structure modernization is going, I think there's more and more of a need to have a tight G1, G3 relationship as you start to talk about what positions, skills, knowledge, skills, behaviors, standard duty descriptions, all of that stuff that's probably coming as we move forward, come together. So I think your training has done a great job to level the playing field. Hey, this is how it works. This is what you're supposed to be doing. This is why it connects. Just really, really good job you've done with the team, and then a bunch of supporting partners all over the place. Just really good stuff. As we think about moving forward, I guess I really, really two questions. As we think about moving forward this year in 2021, maybe talk a little bit about the scorecards and the work, and then maybe get to the cutover. But right before we go live in December of 21, really some key milestones that we're looking at, right, Kyle?
Yes, sir. As I kind of alluded to, this past year and up until go live in 2021, our focus is primarily on making sure that the structured data in AOS is complete and correct. So complete being that in order to comply with that one face to one space, you have, however, 600 something thousand active and Army Reserve soldiers in the system. Well, you need to have at least that many billets in the system. And so if you know anything about MTOs and TDAs and the Army, structure top line, the number of authorized positions on all of those is significantly less than however many people we have in the Army. And so the delta there is your transients, the people going and coming from units, people in schoolhouses, all that stuff. Anyways, all that to say, the goal leading up to 21 is to capture those populations, make sure that we have the structure in the right place to enable us to convert their records out of eMILPO and TAP DBR, which is the Army Reserves personnel system, and convert their assignments into IPSA assignments that use the AOS data. And so to that end, our training so far has been focused on establishing the processes that they need to learn to identify, you know, hey, we ran our this faces to spaces process. Here's the output. You know, for these people that don't have positions, they need you to add them to these UICs. Well, how do you do that? Well, that's where we start focusing the training. So we have training on, you know, understanding the analytics that we provide. We have training on understanding the tools that are available inside of AOS and how to create temporary billets, how to align temporary billets, how to validate the work that your editors are doing. And then, you know, when we focus on the higher echelon level, we give them training on the workflow process and how to divide and conquer in terms of delegating duties and ensuring that, you know, the quality of work is meeting the standard that it needs to. And so that's really the training focus that we've had up until now and moving toward December 2021 when we cut over. Now, the proof is really going to be in the pudding as we start on the IPSAE program, looking at these mock conversions and going through these rehearsal of concept, these rock drills, because now our system integrator is going to be taking this, you know, faces to spaces matching, and they're going to actually go and actually do the conversions that they need to do to go live. And, you know, we're going to see the work of all the commands start to come to fruition in those moments when our system integrator starts doing that. You know, all the training and all the hard work that they've been doing, you know, is going to start paying off when we get there. And of course, you know, we'll continue training, and as we start getting feedback from those conversion processes, we'll incorporate any input from our integrators back into the training so that if we do need to make adjustments, you know, we have a population of trained people who are continuing to engage with us in these trainings who can respond and then make the adjustments that they may need to make. So that's all kind of pre-2021 what our focus is. Now, as we get closer to 2021, you know, we're going to be working with the same people who are going to be running the system after IPSAE goes live. And, you know, AOS is not IPSAE. So AOS exists in the same form now that it will after IPSAE goes live. However, the way that you approach the work in AOS will differ for the active component and the reserve after AOS goes live, IPSAE, excuse me, after IPSAE goes live. So right now they're focused in AOS on setting the baseline, the starting point for the active and the reserve to initiate that sort of first assignment or current assignment for everybody. After they go live, now they're going to start learning more about what Captain Hawks was mentioning in terms of the position management, the day-to-day work that you need to do to manage strength within your organizations. And so some of the tools stay the same. Some of the techniques stay the same in AOS. Other things change in terms of the periods of time that you're making the changes and stuff. And so as we get closer to go live with our training, we will start shifting our focus of the training and update our approach to that training to ensure that what people were doing prior to go live carries over as much as it should, but they're also aware of the differences between what they need to be doing before December 2021 and after December 2021.
That's a really good lay down. You know, Dick, how do you think the complexity is? I mean, you've seen it in action in release two. I mean, is it, you know, you're a captain, you've been in an S1. You know, from that perspective, like how complicated do you think this is once you get in the middle of it, you know, pay attention to some training and then just get going?
Sir, you're in just to clarify the question, you're speaking from an AOS use perspective, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, sir, and everyone listening, AOS, it's a phenomenally simple system, front end, because you're just creating elements and saying that these elements belong to a higher echelon. So like a position belongs to, you know, a UIC, and you're defining at what point in time that element exists. And you can take that element and you can change who it belongs to, like it's command and control node, C2 node, and that's, it's really simple, right? What makes it complicated is the fact that you're doing something in AOS and it translates something to IPSAE, right? You're bridging the gap between your 3 and your 1. I had no issues learning AOS when I first started working with Major Loma. Very simple. It's knowing what you shouldn't do, which is specific training that we give.
But that's good to know. I mean, I think that's good crosstalk. I mean, it's a new system. You know, you got to get in, you got to look at it. And then I think the background, I think the biggest probably leap is, like you said, just understanding how the two connect. You know, if things change in AOS, how do you really need to think about that inside of IPSA? That's the more critical thinking skill set that I think needs to be exercised as we go forward. And that's one of those, you know, I just think, you know, changes and things that are impacting our AG core as we go, you know, forward. You know, Kyle, what's next for AOS? You know, I know we're on a bit of a, you know, the G3 has plans to modernize the platform, the whole GFMDI platform that they have. And they got a bunch of systems that help Army units mobilize, how the RFI process works, all these different force structure things that they do that's specifically the G3. So they have a way forward. Maybe you can talk a little bit about where some of this is going.
Yes, sir. And I think you would probably be safe to say that AOS and some of those other systems that we're currently using are the beginnings of a move toward a consolidated force management system. And, you know, our counterparts over in Army G3 in the Global Force Information Management Capability Management Office, they have an objective right now to sort of consolidate all of the different structure, mobilization, and force registration systems into one system called GFIM, or Global Force Information Management. And, you know, they're working some pretty heavy efforts to that end. And I know their goal is to, at some point in 2024 or 25, start moving from a prototype to production, you know, if all things go well for them. And then at that point, you know, we're really going to look at, see how does AOS fit into that? Is it going to roll in and be part of GFIM, or will it endure as sort of a modular of the system? But regardless, we've been working really closely with their team to make sure that what we're doing between IPSA and AOS now is captured and is endures as they go through those system transformations on their side. So we definitely look forward to seeing how that evolves. And, you know, we continue to stay engaged with them so that if, you know, things change, conditions change, as they learn and grow in their processes, we're able to respond and plan for those as well.
I don't know. What's really interesting to me is the shift with talent management discussions, right? You have a task force talent management, and we've been kind of tasked to think through how we manage knowledge, skills, and behaviors. And, you know, they're moving out with formalized assessments, working with TRADOC to really refine tasks and experiences that you gain from certain positions. And then thinking through long-term in the Army, how do you do something like succession planning? And, you know, for me, it's like, hey, to do all that, right, you actually have to lay out a very prescriptive structure of what positions need what KSBs, and then essentially get through experience certain KSBs and then formalize duty descriptions, right? You have to do some of that work to then bounce it against individuals. So IPSA is going to have the individual record, right? The HR record, the talent management record of an individual officer or soldier with the requisite KSBs. We just happen to call it the 25-point profile. But to make succession planning work, you would also need like structure to say, you know, what positions kind of lay in. So there's kind of a burgeoning discussion about how all this comes together over time. I'd be interested in just, you know, your thoughts on that, Kyle.
Definitely. And, you know, this kind of connects to everything else we're doing, right? Better technology creates an ability to increase our understanding of the world and increase the amount of information that we have available to describe the things that we do. And this is no exception. You know, in the past, we were used to describing our demand signal very simply in an MTO or TDA and say, hey, you know, this unit needs this guy. He's an 11 Bravo and his, you know, the grade is E3. And we have four columns for remark codes, 1, 2, 3, and 4, where you have the ability on a document to say, okay, well, he needs an M9. Maybe this person needs to have a PhD in something, but we don't know what. And that's really it, right? So you have a limited ability on structured documents right now to define some aspects of like 20th century talent management, right? If you can call it that. And then on the personnel side, then we respond to that demand signal and we slot people the best we can associated with that. So pretty rudimentary in the past, but we have better systems now. We have systems with more memory, storage ability, better data structures, better processes and power to join larger blobs of information together to find better matches. But the question remains, as you suggested, so we have this concept now of increased descriptions of what we want people to, what attributes we want them to have to fill particular roles in the Army. But where do we put that information? It's not really a matter of how do we do it, right? Those problems have long been solved in technology now, but it's like what system should be the authoritative system to say this position needs these KSBs that go beyond just a remark code and a grade and a POSCO and some security clearance requirements that you get on the document, on the MTO or TDA. But in addition to that, what other attributes does this person need? And if it's a position that exists over a long period of time, it's not just unique. The KSBs may not just be unique to one command team there in the unit at a time. Maybe it's tied back to, you know, doctrine, someone, you know, in TRADOC or the organization integrator for that particular type of organization in the DA staff. You know, they decide that for all units that use this, you know, this kind of standard structure, a TONE, MTO type units, all of the commanders should have this particular attribute. Well, to me, that sounds like it's something that we should probably start thinking about storing on the structure side so that you don't have to keep going in and updating it and refreshing it every time you run a market cycle. And you don't want to have to go back in as a command team and say every single time, hey, you know, we're looking for new people for this role and they need to have the same attributes as the last people because it's this type of position. But if we can find those consistent commonalities across the Army as a starting point to expand and say, hey, you know what? These positions across the Army, regardless of where they are, because of the type of unit it is, they need to have these knowledge, skills, and behaviors as a starting point. Or, you know, these types of organizations, the people that are doing these jobs, they all have the same duty description. And maybe there's a basic foundational duty description that applies. Well, as you look at more and more, you start realizing, well, that's sort of just like a lot of other attributes that you see on positions and MTOs, that's sort of like a position side attribute that probably should exist on the demand side, like AOS or GFIM or FMS even, so that any system, no matter whether it's IPSA or maybe Army Vantage or some other system that uses personnel data outside of the Army even, can pull the same thing and get the same picture of the KSBs and duty descriptions. So I guess that's really a long way of saying we really need to think hard as an Army about where it needs to be. And I think the more people think about it, the more they're going to realize how much more it makes sense to really put that on the structure side of our data enterprise, as opposed to putting it in the more, you know, temporal market side of the IPSA and other personnel systems.
I just appreciate the discussion. I mean, for me, it's like, number one, this is pretty exciting. You go back 2 years, even today, to a certain extent, most assignments are based on rank and MOS. And if you listen to the chief talk, he always says, hey, we need to transition from that legacy or industrial-based system where you just create, you know, HR captains like Dick, and you just put them in HR captain positions because there's just those two variables that you're thinking about. You know, in the future, it's like, hey, if you have much more access to the knowledge, skills, and behaviors of individuals, how do you then unlock utilizing all that skill and talent? And I think part of this discussion, right, really, you have to build out your demand side So how do you think about that and how do you categorize that? Now, if you go to most civilian companies, right, they have standardized duty descriptions and then standardized KSBs for just about any position that they have in their companies. So that's kind of a start point. We have to really get through that. And then where it's housed, you know, I mean, that's really what we're kind of just going back and forth with. But then that feeds the marketplace, you know, what we're doing in AIM2 today, what we'll do in IPSE in the future. And then that soldier's record is the supply side. So in the soldier's, you know, HR record, what knowledge, skills, behaviors they have. And then if you jam them into the marketplace, right, we let the machine lay out, you know, percentages of matches. And, you know, that goes into then consideration for commanders. So the marketplace is still preference based for the most part right now. But you can also introduce this in a much more holistic way to show commanders, here's KSB matches based on the positions you're trying to hire against. So for me, this is where it gets really exciting. You know, it's the bridge to, you know, how do you get to some AI help in this, you know, thought process. So I don't know, really excited, Kyle. You know, what I guess worries you? Did anything worry you as we march along thinking through this?
Well, I think this is universally true for all large organizations, but change is hard, whether you're changing a business process, the location, the people, change is difficult. And because it requires us to often change our way of thinking, change our perspective on things, and see things a little bit differently. And this is no exception. So, you know, one of our main efforts is really leading change in this area and bringing people along with it. And then, of course, as you're leading change, navigating the really dynamic aspects of working on the Army staff, working in the Army with all these other organizations, and really keeping people synchronized so that we can stay on track and keep pursuing these goals that we have to really improve the way we do business in HR. So, you know, I'm really honestly optimistic about the future, but there's definitely challenges, you know, with making sure that people understand what we're doing and why we're doing it, and then really like buying into it so that we can get it done.
Yeah. I think you're being polite. It's just, it's difficult to get everybody, I think, into the same spot to talk about, you know, some of the modernization pieces here. And the Army staff's big, Army entities are big, and there's a lot of players here. So it's how do you get everybody to keep talking? I think is one of the biggest challenges. For me, there seems to be, you know, there's a path forward here. But it's a lot of work too. Task Force Talent Management has done a great job really working on that structure of KSBs and then how it ties into the supply side. And then they're moving out with assessments that validate some of those KSBs on the supply side. So I think it's a growth. This is a growth industry on the demand side. How does this work? How does the force structure modernization, you know, become a little more dynamic for how the field engages with it too? I think that's exciting stuff too. But of course, me and you are kind of nerdy, right, Kyle? I mean, we like to talk about this kind of stuff.
Yes, sir. And you know, I'll say with regard to, you know, getting other people on board, nothing warms my heart more than to see someone I've been working with and training with in a command somewhere really come into their own and start understanding things and coming up with their own solutions. And I think it's a similar thing that I hope to see happen, you know, even at the Army staff level, as people from Talent Management Task Force gain a larger understanding of what we're doing here, you know, they'll start synthesizing their own solutions that use the tools that we're giving them. And, you know, they'll start seeing at a much higher level how useful this is, you know, where the right place to plug in is. And then once that sort of renaissance happens across the staff and people start seeing for themselves, you know, how this all fits and where it works. You know, then they'll be able to start talking to each other and realizing, oh, okay, you know, we don't need training wheels anymore on this. We understand it. Now we can start coming up with ideas and policies, you know, using the authority that we have to really move this in a direction holistically, you know, across the organization. And then I think what you and I will find, sir, is that, you know, we will start entering a support role where, you know, we continue to be the subject matter experts, but, you know, we guide them along as they sort of start building momentum toward really getting after what it is that we see needs to get done.
You know, this, I think this is a difficult topic, right? The Army org server, not a lot of people are familiar with it. They're not necessarily familiar with force structure modernization, but you know, it's always good to just talk some of this out and then where some of it is likely headed. I'll give Dick a chance for some parting thoughts, before we wrap it up. Dick?
Yeah, thank you, sir. So for the folks that are less technical in nature, we have an Army data enterprise, and that's composed of a bunch of systems that receive data, ingest it, allow users to transact on it, and they send it somewhere. And you know, what our program is doing, what Major Luoma hinted at with the force management side, the consolidation, you're getting rid of hops. You're getting rid of places where that data is going to be misinterpreted or lost. And, you know, that's something that's not inherently appreciated by people that maybe don't understand data and risk or don't have experience in this realm. So while this doesn't feel strong and it's scary because so much is changing at once, long term, you're going to see a lot less discomfort. You're going to see a lot less lost transactions, et cetera. The things, you know, like going to your finance office and something being misplaced or, you know, a different system not having a right value that causes a soldier not to get paid. And then the talent management topic is something everyone should be excited about. I've watched decentralized talent management, which is the management of your platoon leaders, your XOs, your company commanders. And I've even supported, talent management for field grade officers. You know, once an officer is assigned to an installation, the MSC takes control of that officer and they kind of say, where does this major need KD? You know, how many hard KD spots do we have? How many soft KD spots do we have? You know, and it's people that know those officers personally. There's no ill intent, but it's almost like personality and a lack of data maybe prevents the best personnel decisions. With evaluations, it's a little bit of being in the right place at the right time. You know, does your raider have profile space? Are you in a position that happens to be deploying? Opening the door for data-driven personnel decisions is going to create an equal playing field where it's not so much tribalism and it's more, how do you perform? You know, and what does the data show? So be excited. It's awesome. We're going great places, even if it's just a little step and it doesn't seem like it.
Yeah, I all good comments, Dick. I think the chief is pushing us in that direction. As I listen to his guidance and listen to him, you know, speak in the media and just kind of push, you know, what his intent is with creating a talent management system in the Army versus, you know, a legacy based system. But, and then it bleeds, my big takeaway is this bleeds outside of HR, right? This ain't just HR people. This is something that affects everybody in the Army, the operators, the G3s of the Army, as much as it impacts the HR community. Talent management really just starts to seep all over the place. And it's very core. We're driving to create tools that will increase efficiency and readiness for the force. That's really the top line statement in the people strategy. We're going to improve readiness in the areas that we excel at as Americans, which is, you know, understanding all of this talent that we have, and not just top down management of that talent, but allow that talent to start to interact with commanders and others and get folks into the right place at the right time. Um, So yeah, great comments. You know, Kyle, you've been fantastic over the last, you know, whatever, 45 minutes or so. Really just want to say thanks for plugging in, you two. You know, a lot of stuff going on in the IPSA arena and the IPSA world. We're headed towards release 3, go live in December 21. We're out on every social media platform you can think of. Well, almost every social media platform you can think of. So please check us out there. You know, Facebook is really active. Our S1Net site is also very active. You know, just really appreciate your time today and look forward to you guys plugging in to another IPSA podcast in the future. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure.
Motivated. Right soldier, right job, right on time.
24/7, 365.